Election College, Episode 37, The Election of 1888. A relatively unknown Republican defeats a popular Democratic incumbent.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
So Ben, it's 1888 and I'm ready to throw a party. How about you?
Party.
Yay! So I mean, Grover Cleveland. He's a pretty popular guy.
Yeah, Grover is like a party name too. I think we talked about that in the last episode, how cool his name was. Or maybe we said how strange it was. Whatever our opinion was then, it's the same now. But either way, he is partying it up.
Hey, you know what's pretty crazy? Grover Cleveland's mustache kind of looks like Grandpa Smith's when he grew it out.
Yeah? Yeah, I guess so.
I wonder if we're related to him.
We probably are. Probably just because of the mustache we're related to him.
I think so.
It's interesting.
A snazzy upper lip.
Did they live at the same time? No, it probably didn't.
Probably not.
No.
Hey, speaking of beards, did you know that Harrison was like the last president? I'm pretty sure of this. He was the last president to have a full beard.
Jason, I don't even know who Harrison is. What are you talking about? We haven't got that far yet.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we should talk about him a little bit.
But anyway, if he had a beard, he was cool. So
Yeah. So Benjamin Harrison, he was actually born not too far from where I live in the Cincinnati area. And he was the grandson of William Henry Harrison. Remember him?
That sounds like a president we've discussed in the past. He was the guy who gave really long speeches. Is that right?
He gave really long speech.
Yeah. Yes. Speech. Singular. He was a prominent attorney. He became a leader in his church. He was a politician later on. He served in the war, and we'll go in a little more depth than that, but he was just kind of a man of multicolored, I guess you could say, jobs. He just kind of did a little bit of everything, kind of like a lot of the presidents in that era did.
I was wondering where you're going with the multicolored. I was thinking like a Technicolor dream coat or something.
He dyed his hair in the color of a rainbow just for fun one day.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a cool story.
Mm-hmm.
So the Republicans at this point are really reeling from a defeat because chances are if you were a president in the late 1860s, you were going to be a Republican, right?
Yeah, they had like five or six in a row that won.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the party of Lincoln. So my goodness, of course they're going to win.
Well, and plus, you know, the Democrats, the whole Civil War thing was their fault. Everybody knows that. So,
right.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, but the problem you had if you were a Republican is that you were a member of one of at least a couple of different factions. And we talked about that a little bit, about the stalwarts and who were those other guys called?
I don't remember.
Half-breeds. The half-breeds.
The half-breeds. Thank you.
The term of endearment.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole half-breeds and debate that we had going on about whether that was the term of endearment or not. But yeah, basically, we won't go too far into it, but if you're a Republican in this era, you're not united with everybody else who calls themselves a Republican. And we've got this name for them called the Mugwumps. Pretty much the Mugwumps are anybody who leaves a party and kind of shakes things up. And so there's just like, there's still a ton of Mugwumps out there.
Yeah. And they're out there hanging out, and you've got the party faithful who pretty much are being led. I guess this would be accurate to say they were being led by James Blaine from Maine. Hey. That right.
Blaine from Maine.
Yeah. So James Blaine, he was like, listen, guys, I have tried to run for president and it's just not working out too well with me. So yeah. How about somebody else have a crack at this?
Right. Yeah. And one of the big issues in this election is tariff policies. And tariffs, as we know, are just a fancy name for taxes, pretty much. But tariffs kind of take the center stage for the election. Harrison, who, of course, we know was coming up here in the ranks, pretty much took the side of anybody who was a factory worker or an industrialist or someone who was kind of the everyman. And they wanted to keep all the tariffs high. And then President Cleveland, at the same time, said that high tariffs were unfair to consumers. So you can see either one of their points, I'm sure. But that kind of becomes the central fighting platform, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, you have to keep in mind that at this point in our history, there was no federal income tax. So this was the big way that the federal government had the opportunity to make some big bucks from the citizens. So the tariff issue was huge for everyone. And you know, we kind of take it for granted, I guess. Most of us who are employed, we don't see the full amount of our paychecks. We're just paying the government. And we think about it when April rolls around and we're paying our taxes. But yeah, this was a huge, huge issue in the daily life of the American citizen at this point.
And it certainly was an issue that everyone, you could say, would have had an opinion on. Not just a lot of the issues now that people are iffy on, and, oh, okay, I don't really have an opinion on that. You pretty much had an opinion on tariffs. The Democrats were pretty united whenever they came together at the convention, the Democratic National Convention, just to kind of get things going. They pretty much said, okay, well, we're just going to go ahead and say, President Cleveland, he's going to be renominated for running for president. No formal ballot needed. We know it's going to go. And really, at this point, that makes it the first time that a Democrat had been renominated since 1840.
Yeah.
Which is a long time.
Yeah, it was old Marty. Moity.
Yeah, Moity.
I mean, that's a whole different era of American history when you think about it.
There really is, yeah.
And, you know, we're just talking about how it seems like we're starting to relate to these guys a little bit better because the history is a little more recent. And even the clothing that they wore in 1888 seemed to be just a smidge bit more like what we would recognize today. And, yeah, the Stephen Grover Cleveland was doing a pretty fantastic job, and I liked his bow tie,
yeah,
and his mustache. So,
well, you remember old Tommy Hendricks, right? If Cleveland's going to stay, get renominated, why not just go ahead and renominate Hendricks, Jason?
Well, of course. Why not?
Because he's dead. Sorry to break it to you like that.
Ah, man, what's up with the vice presidents?
I think anybody who runs for vice president at this era pretty much has a death wish. They're just trying to die.
Yeah.
Or become wildly unpopular.
Yeah, Ben, we actually got an email early in the week. I guess, Ben, you already know this. Hey, for our audience, we got an email earlier this week about how they love the podcast and everything, but what are we going to do after we follow the election of, I guess, 2016 would be our last in this phase of Election College. And it might be interesting to do biographies of the vice presidents. I don't know, but I would love to hear some feedback from everyone. Would you like to know more about the vice presidents? Would you like to know more about the first ladies? Should we go more in depth about the presidents themselves? But it just seems like if you're a vice president, oh.
Yeah, we've definitely had a couple people voice that. What are you guys going to do after this? Is it done? And no, we're not planning on making it done. So we have some ideas and we have ways we can go, but let us know what you want to hear too.
So the Republicans.
Uh-huh.
Blaine is like, I'm going to chill out. Harrison is in. Who are some of the other parties involved in this crazy election of 1888?
Well, before we talk about that, Jason, why don't we go take just a little break?
So, Ben, as many audience members know, I'm involved in social media. You're involved in podcasting. I'm involved in podcasting. You're involved in social media. We do this type of thing for a living.
That's right. And we have a lot of people. I've been helping a few people in my personal life, but also as part of some different interactions professionally to work out ways that you can be better at social media and podcasting, and even use them in conjunction with each other. So we just want to let everybody know that Jason and I do private consulting. We do some podcast consulting. We do some social media consulting. And if you want to be like us, which is to say super cool, send us an email.
Yeah, just email info@electioncollege.com. We will be in touch. We do everything from branding to consulting to making you look like a rock star in the digital space.
So, Jason, we've got the Prohibition Party, and, well, they're around. They're gaining some traction. They pretty much still have the whole same deal they had before. Let's prohibit alcohol.
Yeah.
And that's kind of their whole deal. Like, that's it.
Yeah. They had their national convention up in Indianapolis, which actually is where Benjamin Harrison is from. And I'm sure it was a very sober event. So they're there.
I get it. Sober. So funny. We've also got the Union Labor Party, and don't confuse that with the United Labor Party.
No.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. They're obviously terribly, incredibly distinct from one another. So the Union Labor Party pretty much got together to improve working conditions of the everyman, the people in the labor unions. But the United Labor Party got together to help the single tax movement. And so both parties really have the best interest at heart of the unions. And they actually try to get a joint ticket and try to get behind one ticket, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, about the only thing they had going for them was that they both had their conventions in Cincinnati, and that was about it.
Right, yeah.
So, hey, you remember the Greenback Party?
I do.
I think it was in the last episode I said, who are the Greenbacks anyway? And
now they're back to tell you.
Yeah, they just kind of ceased to exist after 1888. That's pretty much all you need to know about the Greenback Party. If anybody out there is a big fan of the Greenback Party, go ahead, let us have it. Let us know more about why you have a passion for the Greenback Party. But people in 1888 did not have a passion for the Greenback Party, and they went the way of, I was going to say the dinosaur, but they went the way of something else. So
yeah, there are still dinosaurs like Jurassic Park. Haven't you seen it?
Right.
Yeah.
So there was the American Party, and they ceased to exist after 1888, too. They were basically the anti-Masonics of the past. And you had the Equal Rights Party, which you got to hand it to the Equal Rights Party. I mean, they were very progressive. They were nominating women for office. And in this period of time, women just that was not seen as proper. And it took decades after this for women to even have the ability to go to the ballot box. So good on you, Equal Rights Party. Belva A. Lockwood was the nominee.
Well, and I thought we might have been done, but no, one more at least that's well known, kind of. We had the Industrial Reform Party, and this is going to be a shocker, but it was pretty much exactly what it sounds like, reforming and industrial working conditions and the taxes and things that went with them. So that rounds out the top 25 most popular political parties of the era. And we'll be sure to have many more as we go. I'm positive of it.
Yeah, and we mentioned this a number of times as we were going through the Civil War. This is an election podcast, so we do want to acknowledge the fact that there was a lot of shifting going on, going from more of an agrarian society to a more industrial society. You had the Gilded Age. This was the Gilded Age. This was the era where people were getting very wealthy, and there was a whole industrial class that was basically working poor. And so you had a lot of situations where you needed these labor unions to improve working conditions for the common person. You had the meatpacking industry, which was a kind of a disaster. Just all kinds of different things going on in America. But we can't get into all of that. We're just talking presidential elections. So we want to pause and acknowledge that, though.
Absolutely. I mentioned earlier that one of the big issues was the tariff reform idea. And just to go into that a little bit more, the whole thing kind of sparked off for the campaign during Cleveland's annual message to Congress in December of 87, which, you know, the year before the actual election ran. And so he pretty much was on the side that the tariff's too high. It's unnecessary taxation, and it's really not even justified in any way. And of course, the Republicans responded that the high tariff would help protect the industrial workers and the foreign, would help protect the industrial workers from foreign competition. It would keep America continuing to be a industry nation, help, you know, with wages and everything like that. But the thing is, I mean, it became this huge issue, but it really wasn't a new issue. It really been stretching back for almost a decade at this point.
Yeah, well, actually even further back than that,
because sure.
You had the tariff of, I think it was like 1860, something like that. So all the way back to whose administration would that have been? 1816. So you had the protectionists and the free traders, and there was just this whole big issue. How do we relate to foreign nations? How much are we going to tax? And are we going to tax our exports? And how much revenue are we going to make off of that? So nothing new here.
No, but it certainly encapsulated the election as a whole, so became a big issue. We've also got this kind of a scandal, I guess you could almost say, of the Blocks of Five. And William Wade Dudley was a lawyer, and he was a campaigner as well. He was big into campaigning against and prosecuting election frauds. And at one point, Benjamin Harrison, our buddy Benny,
yeah,
made Dudley the treasurer of the Republican National Committee.
Yeah. And so this would have all really been a secret had it not been for a letter that was found. I think it was found written to a railroading organization or
yeah,
something of that sort. Yeah. And they found out that they were selling votes.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's any other
Whoops.
Way to say that.
Yeah.
You have to keep in mind that now most of us are voting via secret ballot, but it wasn't always that way. As a matter of fact, a secret ballot would have been a novel thing at this time for a state. I believe Kentucky I think Louisville, Kentucky had the first secret ballots either in this election or the next election. And then Massachusetts was the first state to have the secret ballot. So you didn't have that back in 1888. And they actually called the secret ballot, Ben, I don't know if you knew this, they called it the Australian ballot.
I did not know that. Is that because Australians had secret ballots?
I would suppose so. But to just prove that we're Americans and we like to add our own terminology and get credit for it, it was also called the Massachusetts ballot.
Right, because why not? It's so similar after all.
So stick that info in your pipe and smoke it. When you go to the polls and you vote and it's a secret, it's a Massachusetts ballot.
Thanks, Massachusetts.
Yeah, hats off.
So there's also this, I guess, kind of a scandal where the Murchison letter is what we call it. There was a dude named George Osgoodby, who was a California Republican. He wrote a letter to a British ambassador to the United States, and he wrote it under the not his own name. He wrote it under the name of Charles Murchison, and he said he was an Englishman who now lived in California and wanted to know how he thought he should vote in the upcoming election. And the British ambassador suggested that Grover Cleveland was probably the best man from the British point of view. And so then the Republicans, of course, took this and ran with it and published the letter just a couple weeks before the election. And of course, Irish American voters really took hold of that. And Cleveland ended up losing New York and Indiana, which we'll go on to say was a bigger deal than that as well. But more interestingly to me is that the British ambassador actually lost his job. So, whoops, I guess you shouldn't have responded to that letter. But it's just interesting to me that a letter published from one outside representative or opinion could have had that big of an impact on an election.
Yeah, isn't it crazy how for the first 50 years of our country, it was really the mindset was either you kind of align yourself with the British way of thinking or the French way of thinking. And now after the Civil War, after things are a little more industrialized and we have this huge immigrant population coming in from Ireland, that it's really are you thinking more like a British Protestant or are you thinking more like an Irish Catholic? And it really becomes evident because time after time after time now, New York is a key state in the way the elections happen. And it's interesting because you had the organization in New York City, Tammany Hall, which actually had been around since, I think, the turn of the century, or even before that, the 1700s into the 1800s. And this group really helped immigrants. And at this particular point in the election, Tammany Hall was really advocating for these Irish immigrants. And that, well, let's talk about it. Let's talk about those election results.
Well, the election was kind of in hand in most parts of the country. But as we kind of mentioned, New York is a big one, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Indiana. Those are all kind of the swing states at this point in time. And Harrison pretty much splits most of the states with Cleveland at this time. And it seems like there was probably some fraudulent balloting in a couple of the states, but Harrison wins most of those ones that were fraudulent or were thought to be fraudulent, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah. And this really goes to show how important every single vote counts. Because when it comes to the popular vote, Harrison only wins the popular vote by 90,000 votes,
which at the beginning of the country would have been a bajillion in comparison, but at this point is less than 1%.
Yeah, and I misspoke. Cleveland
right
won by 90,000. So Cleveland wins the popular vote, but Harrison wins those key elector votes, which is what you want. So even though 90,000 votes, which is like 0.8%, he wins the Electoral College 233 to 168.
Right. And there's all sorts of scenarios that are set up here where, you know, one of them is if Cleveland had won Indiana, which is where he was from, he would have had the electoral vote by 204 to 197. And you only needed 201 at that point. But he doesn't. And then there's a couple other, slight counties, I think it was, that even if he'd won a couple counties and a couple different states went a different way, he would have also had the popular vote under wraps, or the electoral vote under wraps, but he didn't again. So Cleveland actually gets the most votes. He gets the most popular vote. And he loses the election. And he's only the third one in history that this has happened to. We've talked about them before. Andrew Jackson in 1824, Samuel Tilden in 1876, and then Grover Cleveland in 1888. And believe it or not, since 1888, we've only had one more. And we'll talk about that in whatever, however many episodes that ends up being from now.
Right. It's kind of funny because, you know, whenever you have a president who loses an election, it's kind of like, well, okay, I'm just going to go back to the ranch and farm, or go on a speaking tour or whatever. But the first lady, Frances Cleveland, I think she would have been one of the first ladies that I would really like to meet. I mean, she seems like she's really spunky because she's young. She's extremely popular, and she's leaving the White House, and I can just hear her say this. She's like, hey, guys, talking to the White House staffer. She's like, take care of this place because we're coming back.
Yeah. How would you like that? They're like, okay, well, it was really nice getting to know you. Have a great life. And she's like, oh, no. We're just leaving for 4 years. We're coming right back. We'll be back.
Yeah. So it's an interesting 4 years ahead, because we've got Harrison in the White House doing his thing, doing his Republican thing. And we've got Cleveland doing his thing, which we'll talk about in the next episode.
And of course, we just still have tariffs. Like, nothing ever gets resolved. So,
yeah. Huh. Did that ever get resolved?
Did it ever get resolved, you said?
Yeah.
Of course. But not during this election.
Oh, man. Hey, Ben, I love getting reviews, don't you?
I do. It makes me feel really warm inside.
Yeah. And Mr. J. Patch, he left a review this past week. He said, as a high school history teacher, I enjoy the Cousins colorful timeline of our nation's presidents. It provides great nuggets of knowledge and fun additions to my lessons. So, wow, that's awesome. Thank you. That is awesome.
We're being used to influence students, apparently, and that's at once humbling and terrifying. So, hey. If you're a teacher and you want to play our episodes for your students, or you want to use it to supplement some info or whatever, go for it. We'd love to hear about it too. So let us know.
Yeah. And really, from the beginning, this podcast originated out of the whole thinking of who in the world ran against the presidents. Like, we never hear about the losers. And so, so it's fascinating, as we're learning so much, that people who have majored in history, we have had political scientists, we've had historians, learn a few things because we're learning a few things. So we really appreciate the community aspect that Election College has become.
Hey, if you're listening to this when it comes out on release, or maybe even just a little bit later, you're getting close on that Christmas creep, right? we're getting close. People are going to start talking about Christmas presents here soon and whatnot. And if you're like me, I mean, I'm not a big, oh, let's go out to the stores on Black Friday and get trampled and buy a bunch of stuff we don't need. But I am more susceptible to internet shopping. And so we wanted to remind you all that if you're doing your internet shopping at Amazon.com this year, that you should use our link.
Yeah. You just go to electioncollege.com/Amazon. You will be taken directly to the Amazon store. You go shopping, you make people happy, and you make us happy because that helps support the podcast.
That's right. We make money and you don't spend any extra. You might even spend less. Come on, if you go to Amazon. So support your local stores. But if you're going to do your internet shopping, support us.
Oh, man. Well, Ben, this has been fun. And do you have anything else to add about the election of 1888?
Nope. But if you guys have anything else to add, make sure you tell us about it on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Election College on all of those. Shoot us an email at info@electioncollege or contact@electioncollege. And hopefully we'll see you in 4 years.
Yeah, or next time.
Right. Whatever.
Take care, everyone.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.